Have you ever walked past City Hall and seen the statue of the black man, head up, arms open, larger than life? That's Octavius Caddo, a teacher, athlete, and activist whose memorial just went up a couple of years ago and is the first to honor a black American on public land in Philadelphia. This week marks the 150th anniversary of one of Philadelphia's earliest marches. It observed the passage of the 15th Amendment, which guaranteed voting rights to men of color. Caddo was one of the main organizers of the march, and on April 26, 1870, he helped lead thousands of people through the streets to celebrate. But the jubilation didn't last. While the passage of the amendment was a big deal for African Americans, the fight to secure voting rights was just beginning. I'm Annette John Hall. This is The Why. Dan Biddle teaches journalism at the University of Delaware and is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He and co-author Murray Dubin spent more than 7 years writing and researching their book on Caddo called Tasting Freedom, Octavius Caddo and the Battle for Equality in Civil War America. Dan described how the march was a celebration for some, but for others, not so much.
They marched down Broad Street, east along Lombard and Walnut into the center of the black community all the way to Fifth, and then they turned north past Independence Hall and back to Broad. And the march route was more than 5 miles. 12 brass bands played. Black merchants closed their stores. Marchers arrived into our city on streetcars, on foot, on ferries from New Jersey and New York. And the people in that line of march are like a snapshot of organized black America in 1870. There were church contingents, literary societies, equal rights leagues, which were kind of the political force fighting for equality in those days. The Hod Carriers and Laborers Association, one of the first black labor unions. That gives you a clue to some of the politics at that moment. Frederick Douglass was in the parade, riding in a carriage drawn by horses. And along the way, there were thousands of spectators. The reaction almost varied by neighborhood. Black residents along Lombard Street had already decked out the neighborhood with flowers and flags. But in white Philadelphia, some sections of South Philadelphia, the reaction was quite different. A tavern was draped in black for mourning. And when some of the marchers jeered at that sight, curses rained down on them from the windows. Other people threw garbage. Shots were fired. And the harassing followed the marchers as they moved up Fifth Street. And no police officers intervened.
Why did this march take place in Philadelphia?
Well, it was the hub of black politics in the North. It was the hub of black religion. And black activism really lived here. There was also the first black newspaper begun here. Two of the greatest, oldest black churches were founded here. There was a renowned black school, the Institute for Colored Youth, that had gained attention all over the country. Octavius Caddo was at the forefront of that, but he was one of only many activists, men and women, who fought these battles. He was, by the standards of that day, a Renaissance man, charismatic speaker, very involved in proponents of the 15th Amendment, and spoke for it and campaigned for it. He also led a black baseball team in Philadelphia called the Pythians, that was a great success.
So just to be clear, Dan, the 15th Amendment did not allow women the right to vote, right?
That's a really important point. You know, that right was not won and enacted until half a century later. And all the records show us that the leaders of the women's suffrage drives were deeply divided over support for extending the franchise to men of color, but not to women. And sad to say, a lot of people in that struggle fell into the most evil kind of racist stereotyping in their cause for granting the vote to women. But some of the greatest leaders of that struggle were Lucretia Mott and her close ally in Philadelphia, Mary Grew, and both of those women suffrage leaders were part of the 15th Amendment parade and part of the celebration.
What were the politics of the vote like at that time? Who supported black men getting the right to vote and who opposed it?
Annette, in those days, the party that really lined up in favor of giving black men the ballot was the party of Lincoln, the Republican Party. In the 1860s, leaders like Frederick Douglass and Cato pointed over and over to the valor and sacrifice of black soldiers helping the Union win the Civil War as Exhibit A in the case for voting rights. But even after the war, it was an uphill fight. President Andrew Johnson tried to talk the black leadership out of it. The Pennsylvania legislature turned down a bill that would have extended voting rights to black men. And powerful whites were pushing back against the impact of that amendment even before the parade of April 26, 1870. Many of those powerful whites were part of the Democratic Party, who in those days branded itself the party of white man's government. And when you read the records of that party, its leaders used the N-word over and over again to try to rally a certain kind of white voter. But along comes Ulysses Grant, war hero who was elected president in 1868, and he's a Lincoln Republican who supported the 15th Amendment.
Let's get back to the parade, Dan. You mentioned the great civil rights leader and orator, Frederick Douglass, attended the march. Did he speak?
Yes, he did. Douglass is in his 50s by then, and he says he's weary from having given impromptu speeches all day long along the parade route, and he doesn't have anything prepared, and then he launches into one of his classic spellbinding speeches.
Civility is the rule. Insult the exception. It was so today that we marched the streets of Philadelphia.
He said that he had heard the epithets that whites had shouted at the parade that day and seen what was thrown at the marchers. This was old hat for him, but he said an unusual feeling had overtaken him as he rode along in the parade. This time, he felt safe.
I felt that I was covered, that there was something about the 15th Amendment that seemed to shield me as the hide of a rhinoceros.
Out of that whole march, two speeches really stand out. Cato said,
"The black man knows on which side of the line to vote,"
meaning the Republican Party, but he put in this caveat.
"He not only reads, but he remembers. And what is better still, he thinks."
Men of color would keep voting Republican as long as that party championed equal rights.
"We will stand for the party that has throttled slavery,"
as he put it.
"No West, no North, no South, no white man's government, nor black man's country, but one destiny for all."
What happened after the parade? Did it change life in Philadelphia?
I think it's fair to say Americans of color believed that they finally had within their grasp the key to actual power in a democracy, the ballot. Cato and Frederick Douglass and Lucretia Mott and other men and women who had been on the front lines of all those early struggles were filled with hope. They believed that the vote, as Cato and other leaders had written, would cause, quote, "all the other evils and outrages to disappear like the dews of morning from the morning sun." They were wrong.
We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. Shai here. When the pandemic hit, we here at the Y thought, what's this going to mean for our communities, our jobs, our schools, the things we're all thinking about right now? And we decided we're going to try to answer those questions the best we can every day. But we can't do it without your help. Consider donating to WHYY to keep our reporters out there answering the big questions on your mind. It's more important now than ever. Visit WHYY.org to make your pledge. Thanks.
This is The Y. I'm Annette John Hall. I'm talking to author and journalist Dan Biddle about the Philadelphia parade that celebrated the ratification of the 15th Amendment and the rights and the consequences that came out of it. Dan, you said that this didn't quite change things the way the marchers wanted it to. What was the immediate backlash from the march?
The forces that wanted to discourage black voting, once the amendment became the law of the land, got very creative in finding ways to suppress black voting. They closed down the tax assessor's office in New Castle County, Delaware, thus to deny black men in that county the ability to get the paperwork they needed in order to register to vote. In North Jersey, the Democratic newspaper encouraged strong white men to go to the polls and demand ID from every black voter. Does that sound familiar? In Philadelphia and Camden, even on Election Day 1870, the fall of the year of that march, white policemen who were on Democratic payrolls attacked black voters who had lined up before dawn to cast their first vote. But thousands of them stood their ground and voted anyway.
What happened when they voted?
The next big election was the fall of 1871, with a lot more on the ballot, such as the mayor's office. And the enemies of black voting set out to make things much worse for black men trying to vote in Philadelphia that year. White thugs and uniformed police officers, if you can imagine this, began attacking black men even before the polls opened that morning. Dozens were injured. Four men of color were killed. Cato was shot to death at age 32 while trying to protect black voters. He died with sample ballots in his pocket.
So, Dan, Octavius Cato is tragically killed. Whites are suppressing blacks' voting rights at every turn, so much that it took the Voting Rights Act of 1965, about 100 years later, to ensure that right for black people. So looking back, did the 15th Amendment parade in Philadelphia make a huge difference?
I think it did. It gave African Americans a feeling of hope and empowerment. And you have to remember, it was in a city where people remembered how recently they hadn't been allowed to enter a museum. They couldn't go to the Franklin Institute. They couldn't ride a streetcar. And it also gave them a new kind of crass political leverage. I mean, I think Frederick Douglass and others always said that trying to persuade slave owners and racist whites that racism and slavery were bad things was never going to work. What was going to work was the ability to grab the levers of actual political power. And that's what black men had once they had the vote, and they were able to use it, you know, in trade-offs, such as the victory in winning the right to ride on public transportation. And part of the strategy in winning that fight that Cato led was to lobby the legislature again and again and again. And Cato and two allies of his made many a trip there, but they persuaded people there that the vote for men of color was around the corner. And if members of the legislature voted in favor of black rights in public transportation, black voters would return the favor.
Dan, what are some of the lessons that we can take away from this whole activism around the 15th Amendment?
Well, I think there are two. One is we all need to do a better job at looking back and knowing the realities of our history, and that it wasn't a matter, as I think I was taught even in college, that the North won the war and Lincoln and then the radical Republicans wisely gave the vote and other rights to Americans of color. The true story is that Americans of color and a handful of white allies had to fight and fight and fight and sacrifice and shed blood to march for that right, like the marchers that we know better in the modern civil rights struggle. And the other lesson is that the march isn't over. People who see a political or racial advantage in denying some groups of Americans the right to vote still try those stunts. They might not be exactly like what went on in the 1860s and 70s, but, you know, voter ID laws, that is an echo of what Democrats tried to do at the polls to discourage black voting, even after black men's vote became the law of the land.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for sharing this really important piece of history with us. It was great to talk to you about this.
You too, Annette. Really enjoyed doing this.
That was journalist and author Dan Biddle. He and co-author Murray Dubin wrote the biography on Octavius Cattle called Tasting Freedom, Octavius Cattle, and the Battle for Equality in Civil War America. The Why is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Ben-Yaakov, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, under the editorial direction of Katie Colinari. Thanks to Al Banks and Chris Norris for their voice acting help. Hit me up on Twitter at AnnetteJH. Take care of yourselves. Be safe. We'll see you tomorrow.